Hi, my name is Blue, and I'm the host of this new podcast, The 21st Century Teacher, with Livit Earth. And my job is to ensure that our teachers and students get the most out of our programs. This new podcast series is just one of the ways I'm going to be supporting our community of educators with a monthly conversation with a special guest educator discussing a different aspect of 21st century teaching and learning. So today I would just like to start by sharing where I am in the world, and that is the Slocan Valley just north of Nelson, BC. And I would like to acknowledge that I'm incredibly grateful to be living and working and playing here, raising my three sons on what is traditionally the unceded territory of the Sinaik, the Silk, and the Tanaha. And it's also home actually as well to around 5,000 from the Métis Nation. So I just wanted to start by that, incredibly grateful to be able to live, work, and play here. Today we're talking with Misty Patterson, and I'm incredibly grateful that you've taken the time out of your busy schedule to talk to me today.
I am incredibly grateful to be here and to meet with you, and also to connect with anyone who's listening to this episode. I hope that they reach out and share their takeaways and their musings on this. And like you, I'm very grateful as well to live in British Columbia. I'm in the North Vancouver area, and I'm on the unceded and traditional territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. And the more I learn from friends in the nation, the more I realize what it means to say unceded, what it means to be a Canadian, what it means to be an educator, and our responsibilities to truth and reconciliation. So I'm also very, very grateful to be where I am here today and to be with you.
Thank you so much, Misty. I appreciate you sharing that. So let's dive into the first question. So you have developed an approach to inquiry that is called the Pop-Up Studio. And I will say that I've already downloaded the mini guide that you have, which I really appreciated. I was sharing with you just before we hit record here. So can you describe what it's all about?
I can. And I was sharing with you earlier that the question of what it's all about, or what is it about at its core, is always a bit of a stressful one for me to answer, because truly, as a designer and a facilitator of learning experiences, I'm interested in creating conditions that awaken learners to transformative possibilities that might occur at all levels and dimensions of our being, from perception to action. So at its core, I can say at this point in time, but maybe I can come back, you know, in another year and another year after that. And, you know, my response will evolve over time as my practice does. But I would like to use the word encounter, that it's all about encounters of and with and through relationships and possibilities. About educational possibilities specifically, if we just want to look at that one sort of avenue of this work. And I would say renewal and renovation are very important to my work. I'm curious about how we can trouble the inherited ideas and practices that we all have, regardless of where we've come from, how we relate to one another, people to people, people to ideas, to materials, and to the more than human world, just to name a few.
So is there a way that we can imagine this for people that have not heard of the Pop-Up Studio, in terms of, like, can we put it in a box and sort of like physically imagine what it would look like? It sounds to me that it's collaborative and art-based. Like, is there, what are some of the elements so that we can sort of picture that in our minds?
Nice. Yeah. So if we think about studio and make some associations with that word, you mentioned art as an example, an art studio. We might think about a yoga studio. We might think of a creative studio, your podcast studio, you know, all those kinds of things, right? So to me, it generates this idea of a creative space, a space of making something, of experimenting, of tinkering with. And that's the sentiment and the spirit of the work. That's how I want it to feel. The reason why it's called Pop-Up Studio, and if we think about pop-up as being like a pop-up shop, you know, like at a market or something like that. It exists for a period of time. It goes away. The physical structure goes away. It's like that because for me, when I left my administrative position, when I had my daughter and I went and was seconded to the university, I had a shared office space, but I didn't have a classroom space and I was in other people's classroom. And when I returned back to work in the school district, if I did have a space, it was always a shared space. So as I got more into consultancy work and responding to BC teachers initially, NIB teachers who wanted some pro-D around inquiry. I was thinking, okay, well, you know, as an inquiry practitioner myself and having gone through that very complex journey, I'm still going through it. I really appreciated the question of, well, what can it look like? Well, usually the question is, what does it look like? Which has this does sort of sounds like there's one way, right? What does it look like? And traditionally PD days have been, at least in my experience, have been about mastery. So it's been about, I'm going to show you how to do something. You're going to replicate it with mastery into your classroom. It's very rooted in application, right? So I recognized with our, at that point, new or redefined or redesigned curriculum, that it's really not about one way. It's about multiplicity. So I'm thinking, well, how can I show that? You know, and so then I thought about pictures of practice and here's this example, et cetera. But that still really isn't enough when you are responsible for enacting something as a teacher. So that pop-up studio started out as pop-up classroom, and it was me going into schools or organizations who wanted my support in how can we help educators to enact this curriculum, and me going, we need to experience it. And we need to experience it in very creative, dynamic, fluid, flexible types of ways, because that's what's really being asked of us as educators in this type of curriculum.
Yeah, actually, I love the name studio, because you're right. Classroom feels really, it feels kind of rigid, that name. When I think about it, it's like so traditional. And it reminds me of my schooling in the 80s. I'm dating myself a bit there. But so studio sounds, it sounds fresh and collaborative and creative. And I like all of that. Just on a personal level, it resonates with me. So how does inquiry-based learning intersect with the arts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I am doing my PhD in arts education, and I really present myself here as a very much a learner in this domain. In fact, my supervisor will often say to me, like, Misty, what is wrong? Like, we have these conversations, you know, you gain some confidence, you like are saying, yes, I am an artist. And then, you know, you go back like 10 steps, you're like, but I'm not an artist, you know, so that's, it really kind of goes back into these definitions, right? These concepts, like inquiry as a concept. I mean, it is a practice, it's a stance, it's a way of being, but there's multiple ways to understand that word. And the same with arts. And so these kinds of questions, I think, ask us to really go back and look at our definition of these ideas, and then talk about, well, how can they intersect with and collaborate with one another. So if we think about inquiry at its sort of core, right, as a practice and as a stance, as a way of being in the world, I think of that as really questioning, clearly, like troubling something, uncovering complexity, being curious, making sense of something and its implications, of being and becoming something more than we were before we went on that journey called an inquiry. And I think the arts is about that too. I think both inquiry, depending on how it's enacted, and the arts, depending on how that's enacted and understood and taken up. They're both about metamorphosis, I think, really.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. So could you give us an example of a culture shift that could be possible in schools or classrooms when the learning invitations in this way, these experiences, when they're regularly offered?
Well, I've been really fortunate that I've been able to work with thousands of educators at this point in time in hundreds of locations and over time, which has been really profound. And so I'm starting now to trace and to track these common expressions of what this work has meant to people. And a lot of it, oh, I feel like I'm going to get all teary because it's very profound. It's very deep. It's about not just engagement. I mean, that's often why I get called is, you know, students are not so engaged or teachers are not so engaged. How can we do that? And through that engagement, possibilities for so much more wake up, like purpose, passion, dedication, curiosity, love, empathy, creativity. I mean, feeling nourished, even the words spiritual and therapeutic come up time and time again. So there are so many layers, so many dimensions to this work that I'm very curious about. And I'm just really at the edges of understanding what this is really about, because as somebody who's a trained teacher, and you know, I come from a Western background, our cognition, our intellect, in a very sort of singular dimension, is what's privileged. And we were talking about that before we started the formal part of our interview, that both of us, you know, had schooling experiences that, oh, I feel like I'm going to get all teary again, but that we couldn't fully show up as ourselves, that we weren't fully seen. I know that your colleague met me at the Kaleidoscope of Inquiry conference, and I had invited my artist scholar friend who's in my PhD cohort with me, Calder, to join. And the way Calder speaks about this, because that was their experience as well in school, is like, if we imagine ourselves as a house and that we have all these different rooms, that's our schooling has really only turned the light on one room in the house, which is our brain. But even as we learn more about our brain, we see that it's so multifaceted. And so probably just very small areas of our brain are really the ones that are highlighted, probably primarily our prefrontal cortex, which is the last to develop, right? And so we think about, you know, these culture shifts. And I think when we can turn the light on the rooms of our whole selves, and we can do that with our students, that's amazing. Like, how can we not be more lit up?
Yeah, totally. And I gotta say, like, I feel like when you're feeling those emotions and the, you know, that teary kind of feel, the way that I see that is that you're connecting to, in a really heart-centered way, to the work. And I think that it's therefore impactful, and you're picking up on that sense of that. And so I think it's really important as well, just to acknowledge that and those emotions that come up for us when we're doing the good work. And so as a reflective tool in practical terms, as we are teachers and, you know, the boxes have to be ticked to a certain extent as well, how could this be used as a self-reflection or a self-assessment tool with the cross-curricular core competencies in mind of the BC curriculum, particularly I'm talking?
For sure. And so, you know, again, when we say sort of this, you know, pop-up studio is an approach, and it's an approach that exists to help teachers in very practical ways be responsive in the moment, because we can have the best lesson plans in the world, the best written curriculum, but when we're enacting that, we want to do that in a less mechanized type of way. And if we really want to be responsive, we've got to be really tuned in. And we've got to know what we want to do. We've got to have that wise judgment and be able to perform. And so as an approach with four guiding principles, a design framework, and a coaching cycle, the whole approach for Pop-Up Studio is like, you can in the moment respond to your learners and still hold on to the tenets of our BC curriculum, of the IB curriculum. When we're looking at things like concepts, we're looking at experiential learning, at inquiry-based learning. We're looking at heart-centered practices. We're really looking at this very complex and complete, as best we can, kind of approach. So regardless of what you're teaching and what discipline you're working in, what we're wanting to do is give kids hands-on experiences to explore the concepts. And I would say the phenomena, because I think concepts can be very dangerous in terms of compartmentalizing things and not understanding the relationship that exists between things, right? And we're really wanting to get into that relationality. But we can get into that better, I believe, when we're turning on all the lights, when we're like physically doing things with our hands. So I think this question might've come from Dave, who is at our Kaleidoscope of Inquiry session. And what Dave experienced, or what he encountered, some of what he encountered, looked like a bunch of different loose parts and natural materials on a table. We invited all the participants to select materials to interact with those materials through a set of questions, and then to create a representation of their experience, of their interpretation, their perception of the experience afterwards, and have a dialogue about it, and then to take it a bit further, hence moving from perception to action. So I think for Dave, and speaking with him, he was thinking, oh man, like this could be really great as a reflective tool for some of these core competencies. And it totally can, because you're pulling out specific concepts or phenomenon again. Like if you're wanting kids to explore being creative in a particular context, you know, having children explore materials and ask them questions like, select a material that makes you want to build something, or makes you feel like you're awake to lots of possibilities, or whatever you're defining or interpreting creativity as, and then having children work with that and talk about what's coming up for them, they're accessing more than just their cognition that's separate from an actual particular encounter, which is something we tend to do a lot. We abstract, we ask kids to abstract a lot. So this puts something in their hands to have that abstraction become concrete and then be able to move to abstract again. So whether you're doing core competency work like communication or social responsibility or creativity, those become, in a pop-up studio framework, like concepts. But you could be doing the same practice and looking at a concept like representation or conflict or color and shape or texture. You could use the same materials, but you are accessing different information because of the category or concept you're perceiving the material through, which makes it a very sustainable approach, because you're now not needing so many different resources and very particular resources, although those are great. You're able to use what's around you in the environment to access your understanding. I'll give one last example. You mentioned that you know Megan Zenny, and I've been able to have many conversations with Megan, and I've been in workshops with her. And she said, Misty, I can teach anything in a garden. And honestly, Lou, that has really stayed with me over time. I'm like, can she really teach anything in a garden? And as I get to know more about nature and spend more time in nature, I'm like, oh, I think she's right. Because I was always thinking like, well, I'm teaching health, grade six, we have to talk about bullying. Like, how could I talk about that outside, like in a garden? And I think now, like, oh, what about invasive species? And I just saw you light up there. And so we need to have this subject specific knowledge. We need to understand what's in our environment to help children see the connections between what's going on in the particular and then these abstract categories that we call concepts. So I hope that gives it both a very practical and a theoretical response to the question, because what I really want people to understand is that pop-up studio as an approach helps you to become that spontaneous yet knowledgeable and wise teacher that you want to be, that doesn't need to rely upon, oh shoot, where did I put the script that someone else has given me, or, you know, I've inherited, to be able to attune to my learners and have something meaningful that can transpire in the moment. Yeah. Does that answer the question, or did I give like...
No, I love it. I love it. Just go with it. Go with it. This is great stuff. And I want to say too, I also incredibly impressed with Megan Zenny and the approach to I can teach anything in a garden. And it's definitely opened my mind up to the world around me and how my kids learn as well. One thought I have, and I'm probably going on a tangent here from the, you know, the whole idea of the hands-on and the pop-up studio, but out of curiosity, could you see technology playing a part in what you're doing? Like, because it's immediately I'm thinking of like fabrics and material and, you know, the texture of things, because, you know, it's a fun way to learn, especially for the younger, you know, in elementary school. But could you, is there a way of using, intersecting with the digital world?
100%. So let's give some concrete examples here. One of the projects that I've really enjoyed witnessing is out of Reggio Emilia and looking at digital landscapes, digital storytelling. And so using, you know, things like document cameras, digital microscopes to access different perceptions, different vantage points of a particular subject. And we could then take that experience of, and I'm looking at your background right now and I'm seeing this, you know, beautiful, I think it's, is it a lake or a river behind me? But there's a body of water.
A lake, a body of water surrounded by trees, so a nice bright blue sky.
Yes, so beautiful. So let's imagine we're in that particular place and we've got this digital microscope, right? Again, what concepts are we exploring? We might be exploring, like we talked about before, you know, color and texture and line, because maybe we're looking at this through a certain art experience, but we could be looking at this through different scientific concepts, like maybe we're, or competencies for that matter, right? Even getting curious, looking closely, observation, testing a theory on something. What will happen if I do this and I do the other thing and I'm wanting to really look at it in a very close way? Maybe I'm looking at scale or magnification, right? I'm seeing you're nodding, so I think you're picking up what I'm laying down here. So it's the same experience. I am a young person, or what doesn't have to be a young person. I'm me. I'm in that grass. I've got a digital microscope, but I'm attending to the subject through different disciplinary lenses to come up with something new for myself. Oh, I didn't notice this before. Oh, I didn't think about that before. Oh my gosh, like I'm so curious about this now. Something that I didn't see before or sense before. That's what we're really going for. So the technology offers amazing tools to us. There are materials that we can use. So again, the design work for Pop-Up Studio is concept, material, experience, CME. See me. When we have these three elements at play, and I think of them as dynamic elements, they're like entities that we're in relationship with. When those things come together, we can really see our learners. We get way more engagement. And I think part of the reason why is because we're tapping into that artistry. We're tapping into way experts in the field actually are working. So you look at, you know, you're doing a podcast right now. I can see you've got awesome headphones on. You probably have a great microphone on. That allows us to have a way better product at the end, because we've got the right tools to be able to do that. I was doing not so much podcasting, but some oral storytelling with a group of grade fours, and we had to makeshift like sound booths. And I was thinking, oh, I really wish our school had sound booths, because part of the assessment was to have our kindergarten buddies listen to our stories. And we asked, can you recognize the narrators? We hoped we changed our voice so much that our voice couldn't be recognized. They couldn't say, oh, that's Mrs. Patterson, or that's, you know, Johnny or whoever, that we were able to do that, because that's part of the criteria for the drama that we were doing in there. It would have been way better if we had the right materials. And in fact, I'm thinking about a group of grade five learners that I was supporting in my role as consultant with their classroom teacher, and they wanted to do a podcast, and they were saying the same thing. Like, we really need more time with the materials, because we need to figure out how the materials work to optimize the stories that we're trying to tell. Because if the sound isn't good, our story, our message isn't going to get across. It's going to affect the engagement. So you can see all of these concepts now and competencies coming on board because the kids are doing real work that really matters to them and potentially to the world at large. So I think technology can play a huge part in what we're doing because it affords us possibilities that don't exist without that technology.
Yeah, that's great. So what is your vision for arts education in schools? And I speak of this as someone who in school maybe wasn't encouraged in the creative arts because I wasn't very good at drawing and the traditional ways of seeing arts. So I'm curious, I love it in my later years, you know, learning how to podcast and, you know, I write and I do all these other things I've come to much later in life. Can it become more than a subject area? Because it sounds like, you know, even just listening to you, I find it invigorating. And the idea of, you know, I can picture the kids all kind of finding their, you know, their ways of excelling in this collaborative kind of creative way that sometimes gets overlooked. So, yeah, what would be your vision for this?
Yeah, for sure. So I am loving so many different writers, but there's a scholar named Hee-Soon Bai out of Simon Fraser University. She's actually on my committee. I'm very lucky. And she writes about Zen arts. And I'm certainly not an expert in this area at all. But in this beautiful article that I'm looking at, and I'll share that with you so we can included in the show notes. But she talks about, you know, if we can get past thinking of art in economic and instrumental types of ways, like, oh, art is making something beautiful. If we can look at this much more around ethics and aesthetics together, then art can become medicine. And, you know, there's another set of scholars, Barbara Bethel and Mikhail Fisher, that talk about art care practices. I think this is far more of an indigenously understood concept of art being medicine. I think if we can look at arts that way, the potential is huge and extremely important. And as Hee-Soon says, it's extremely important for the survival of any species on the planet. When we think about something that's about ethics. And if we look at the root around aesthetics as well, we're looking at really important ideas around attuning, relationships. Again, I go back to ethics about senses. We learn through our senses, but like, and especially young children, our brain develops that way. So I think we really need to be encouraged to look more at early years and be inspired from that practice. That's how, what I've done, and be way more in tune with sensorial types of experiences and understanding and being sensitive to their profound nature. Eliot Eisner's work has been very inspiring for me, and he talks about why the arts are so necessary for education and that they can be a type of medicine or a resistance to standardization and the reification of education. Even when we talk about best practices, if they're removed from a particular context, they can be very dangerous. What's best in for one particular situation may not be best for another type of situation. I think the arts, when we're paying attention to circumstance and opportunity, to the particulars we were talking about before, to multiple perspectives, to making good judgments, to having things be in proportion with one another, all of these lessons that the arts teach are at play in every other subject area. So I think it's a rethinking for us about what we mean by art and art making and creating and art education. And this is why I've chosen to go into a PhD in arts education with really no fine art background. I mean, I took drawing and sculpture and things like that in my undergrad, through education. They were all education type of classes. They weren't in the arts department. I'm a terrible drawer. Like, I can't paint. Like, you know, and so I think to myself, what the heck am I doing a PhD in art education? My Master's of Arts is in curriculum and instruction. And I was introduced to a course called Living Inquiry that has its roots in phenomenology, hermeneutics, and Zen Buddhism. And that really pushed me to start going, oh my gosh, there's way more at play here than the narrow understanding of intellect. And like, we got to really pay attention to the theory of knowledge and how we understand knowledge and coming to know something. And I just feel like the arts is really allowing me to be way fuller of a human than other ways of thinking about the world and making sense of the world certainly do. So that's my hope, is that, you know, we are striving for artistry in all of our subject areas. And to me, that's a very high caliber education, because every discipline has a craft. And imagine if we are really helping learners to love the craft of all of the sciences, of the social studies, the humanities, the mathematics, as like living disciplines that are ways of taking up the world and being in the world. That's a very exciting place to be, a very vigorous and a place of vitality, I think, which subject specialists as well, I think, can really get behind, because our learners are craving it. They need it. They need something more. They're wanting something more than abstraction, like a drill on a worksheet, as an example. Not to say that a skill isn't important to practice. It's like soccer. You know, we want to practice our dribbling, but if we never play soccer, never see soccer, never, you know, get to meet soccer players who love what they do, continuing to do soccer drills is probably not going to lead to being a phenomenal soccer player. It's the same in all of our disciplines. Yeah. So I hope that wasn't too long-winded of an answer, but I wanted to give a really comprehensive answer, because I think it's much more than thinking, oh, let's start drawing and painting in all of our subjects.
I love that. No, I really appreciate your answer. And actually, what I'll hold on to and remember from this conversation is arts as medicine. I really like that. That's such a great way of looking at it. And also the craft of the subjects, the different subject areas and the way of being in the world. I really love that. It really resonates with me, because it's the same as I already mentioned that, yeah, in my upbringing and my schooling, traditionally arts was drawing, and I'm a hopeless drawer and a painter and all of that, you know, but being creative and, you know, creating sound and audio, and there's just other ways of being in an arts sense. I really appreciate that. So this would be a good time to maybe share a little bit about what you could offer, maybe. So when somebody reaches out to you and they, you know, in your consultant, when your consultant hat is on, what can you offer? What do you bring in?
Oh, thank you for inviting me to answer that question. So really, I am a responder. I'm a creative at heart. I am really good at listening and tuning into what's actually needed, and then responding to that and being really flexible and personalized in the approach. So I often get called for two main reasons. One is around our students or our teachers are really struggling with engagement. How can we change that? And so I'm really good at going, okay, what's going on? What do we need to do? And then here's what I think in terms of an action plan. And then what's more is coming in and working alongside. So that can be virtually or that can be physically, but that's where the magic really comes into play, because I've been told a number of times, and I do notice that I make connections very quickly with young people and adults too, and being able to make them feel comfortable and to ask questions that are responsive to what's happening for them, to draw out these different possibilities and pathways, which then lead to things that we wouldn't have even anticipated. So that's a great way to work with me, is just literally call me up or email me and say, here's what's going on, Misty. Can you come and help me? And I will say, yes, let's do it. And how best can we start up that pathway together? And always leaving people with very tangible action steps so that they can continue on the work without so much cognitive load of, oh, well, that was awesome, but I don't know what to do next. That was a great demo lesson. Shoot, the kids are super engaged and then I'm coming back and like, what do I do next, right? So really laying out those next steps and creating those action plans is something that's really great. If your people are wanting just a little taster, or they're like, you know what, we really like this idea of concepts, we need some help with that, booking me for a workshop, even a 60-minute workshop, super easy to do. Just email me again and we can make that happen, or after school meeting or whatever. And then I offer what as I think super exciting and special. It's something called an edu retreat. So you think about a retreat and something that's educational, and you bring them together. So this is a very intimate experience with me, where like if you were there, Blue, and your team, you would say, Misty, we're really wanting to play with these ideas or these competencies. Can you make us an edu retreat? I would design and facilitate 2 days with you where you just come in and I take care of the rest. So I am caring for you like a guest. I'm curating and designing and facilitating learning experiences that have you working with the concepts and competencies that you want in very holistic types of ways. So you're actually experiencing what you want. So an example is play. People talk about play a lot, but we don't actually get the time to play. So this is an opportunity to, I'm not going to talk at you and give you all the theory and instruct you in play. You're going to actually experience it. And we will unpack it after and pull out the significance of what did that mean to you and where might you want to go with this now in your own practice. But different from a workshop, it's truly a way to offer sustained time in something and an experience, and to suspend the teacher hat and the worries for some of that time so you can be a student and really live out the things that we're talking about that we really want for our children in that embodied firsthand type of way. So that's been a very profound offering that I'm super excited about.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I know I can picture myself in a room, and I was hoping for a, you know, maybe a buffet as well in my mind there as I was thinking about it. But that sounds really great. And of course, we will put your contact details in the show notes. So if anybody would like to follow up with Misty, and a great place to start, I would suggest, having done it myself, would be to check out the mini guide, which I thought was really well produced. And got me thinking about the whole idea of this pop-up studio. So Misty, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I really appreciate it.
I am so grateful to be here, and thank you for allowing me to muse on these questions. They are ones that I'm going to keep coming back to over and over. And because I'm always evolving and responding, I've got some very exciting offerings coming up this fall. There's going to be some project work happening, and I won't say any more than that, but the website is a great place to know what's going on and where to see Misty. If anyone wants to come to Atlanta in November, I'm going to be leading a 2-day workshop there. It's going to be fantastic. I'm very excited to focus on concepts, but of course, materials and experiences are always going to be there. And I just hope that we'll get to see you there maybe, and listeners from this podcast, because we're definitely better together. And none of us have all the answers or magic bullet. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here in dialogue, and education at its best is about dialogue. So thank you again. And I hope to be invited back on the show sometime.
Great. Thank you so much, Misty.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the 21st Century Teacher. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Please do subscribe so you don't miss out on the next show. And also, don't forget to check out our fantastic online learning platform, which is liveit.earth. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon.